evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, January 29, 2019. A youth leader in South Sudan says there is forced recruitment going on in the former Warab state.
The children who are supposed to be taken to school should not be recruited into the National Army now, unless it is a voluntary service, whereby if you want to join the National Army, then you are free to do so.
And some residents of Bor Town claim they were harassed by national security agents.
But the municipality, they are still now violating the orders of the High Court, in which they are now working and surveying in the area. This morning on day 28, I submitted my complaint to the High Court.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A South Sudanese youth leader is calling on the military in his country to stop recruiting young men in Twitch State by force. Lino Modut Angok says chiefs in his village have been instructed by military commanders to round up able-bodied men for military service. He says President Salva Kiir's administration should explain why it is carrying out military conscription in one state. Modut adds the September 12 peace deal prohibits the warring parties, including the Kiir administration, from forcing young men to join the army.
3 days ago, when we had the message from our village, Twitch State, that the local sheep were being harassed by the authority to bring their sons to the National Army, which is not a surprise, because in National Army people are recruited. But what's surprising the villagers and also the community is that the sheep and goat leaders were being forced to bring their sons, yet their children are in school. So the leaders of the community said they don't have children now. What they are focusing is the peace that was signed.
You are saying that the chiefs have been asked to bring children for military conscription. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, it is a military conscription, because if it was a military recruitment, then it could have been advertised in all 32 states of the country.
What is so particular about your state? Why is the government recruiting soldiers or recruiting people from your state?
That is the question that we want to hear from the government and also from the state government. And yet, we have not yet confirmed from this report. They didn't give any clarified information about why this thing happened. We are waiting for the report and also the response.
And have you made your concerns known to the government in Juba that you are not happy with what is happening in your village?
The concerned youth have already written their concern to the government in Juba and also to the government of the state, so that what we need is the children who are supposed to be taken to school should not be recruited into National Army now, unless it is a voluntary service, whereby if you want to join the National Army, then you are free to do so. But if you are told to bring the child who was in school, then it is not acceptable at this moment.
Can you tell some of our listeners who are not from your area, where is this happening exactly in South Sudan? Where is
Twitch State was a former county of Warab State. Twitch State, it is in the former Warab State. It was a Twitch county, but when new state came, Twitch was promoted as a state.
You're telling me that this is happening in Warab State. Is this the first time that people are forced to join the army in that state?
This is not the first time, but what is surprising the community, especially the youth, because I am a youth leader, and then what I was expecting is that the youth should be given a chance for employment. The youth should be given a chance for the scholarship through education, rather than taking them to the army when the nation was preparing through the dialogue and through peaceful development. So I don't know what happened in the rest of the state, but I am focusing on what happened to my state.
Is this military conscription happening all over South Sudan? I mean, can you tell us more about it?
It is not happening all over South Sudan because we have people from other states, and they say they have nothing like that. And that is why we are asking, why is it happening to the state only?
How many people have been taken by force so far, according to your information from the people you have spoken to in Twitch State?
So far, the local chief refused to take the son to the military because they said they need a clear information from the government. If it is a voluntary service, then there should be a letter written to the respective local authority that we need this and it is because of this. So the local chief refused to take the children, but they have been taken. Some have been scared to talk to the police station so that until they bring people.
And why do you think the government is targeting your village?
Since we have not heard what was the plan of the government, is that the managers of the team who went to the village and tell the people that we need people, these are the things now we are asking the government. If you don't know, then you call those officers who went to force the local people to bring the children to the army so that it should be clear whether it was the government or it was some element who want to conscious the community or the situation.
That's Lino Madud Angok, a youth leader from Twitch State, where he says chiefs have been instructed to round up young South Sudanese for military conscription. He was speaking with me from Nairobi earlier today. Some residents of Bor are accusing state officials of deploying National Security Service operatives to harass civilians. One resident claims security agents went to Haisora suburb over the weekend and randomly beat up and arrested residents. Dengai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
Eyewitnesses say the abuse occurred last Friday when Bor municipality leaders and land surveyors attempted to survey and demarcate plots of land in Bor town's Haisora suburb with plans of relocating the plots to investors. But residents stopped the surveyors from carrying out the exercise and filed a complaint in the Jonglei State High Court. On the same day, Judge John Yela Liu ordered Bor municipality officials to hold the exercise until the court could resolve the land dispute. Speaking in Dinka, a resident who prefers to identify himself only as Peter for fear of reprisal attacks from the police, says despite the court order, Bor municipality officials and surveyors returned to the area the very next day.
The
judge issued orders on Friday that the survey activities at Haisora must stop until the dispute is settled by the court. But on Saturday, the mayor went to the area with poses to threaten and beat the resident up. We were not armed, as claimed. The women and girls who were also beaten, were they armed? Nobody was armed.
Resident Ayom Jacob says he was one of the residents beaten up by the national security operatives. Speaking in Dinka, Jacob says the national security officers even tortured some of the residents before releasing them.
The government went to Haisora with its forces and beat up the residents at the block, the arrested men, and thrashed them. I was among the people arrested. I was beaten, but I was later released with some guys, and others are still in detention.
Simon Garang, the head of South Sudan National Security Service in Bor, refused to allow his voice to be recorded, but denied that his forces tortured civilians. Garang says Bor municipality officials told the national security officers to arrest soldiers involved in the chaos at Haisora. Defense attorney James Kachol represents some of the residents who say they were beaten by security personnel.
But the municipality, they are still now violating the orders of the High Court, in which they are now working and surveying in the area. This morning on day 28, I submitted my complaint to the High Court to aware him about what is going on now in Haisora. Some of my clients are being arrested by national security.
Bor Town Mayor James Guy admits he ordered national security officers to intervene in the state of police because it did not any blowback between police officers and local youth. In November, three policemen were killed by youth in the area over similar circumstances. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
From Bor, we move to Yei, where state lawmakers have rejected a proposal by the Joint Defense Board to establish cantonment and training sites for government and opposition forces in Kindila. A rebel spokesman insists Kindila is suitable for bringing together former warring parties. Daniel Friday Martin has the story for VOA from Yei.
Earlier this month, the Joint Defense Board, made of representatives from the government and the various armed opposition groups, met in Juba and identified Kindila Payam as the pilot site for cantoning and training government and opposition forces before they are marched into the National Army. Kindila is located on the southeastern part of Morobo County of Yei River State. Naftali Hassan Gale, Speaker of the Yei River State Transitional Legislative Assembly, says he opposes the idea of establishing any cantonment or training site in Kindila for opposition forces under the leadership of Riek Machar.
Kindila is less than 10 miles from the border with Uganda and also with Congo. The second thing is Kindila is one of the most populated areas in Morobo County. We're saying they should either choose Mapoko or they choose Limo, because Mapoko has some facilities standing there because it has been also one of the training grounds. And Limu is much better because it has also some water sources and the like, so it can be able to accommodate the number that may be deployed there for the training. So this is our position. We are not objecting to the cantonment issue, but we are saying it has to be moved inland.
Awate Esther, a lawmaker representing Kopara County in Yei River State Transitional Legislative Assembly, says he too opposes the choice of Kindila as the pilot site.
Why we are not in support of Kindila and Morta is because these areas are really populated. Those are the areas where agriculture activities are taking place so much, and this is where we get our food. Getting this population of soldiers within the areas will be a problem. Two, at the end of the day, we want people to come out of these schools. It is written even in the agreement.
State lawmaker Aloro Cyprus, who represents the Kindila Payam, says Kindila is one of the areas that was used by the SPLA during its war with the Khartoum government, which left a negative impression on the lives of community members.
The impact will be more than the advantage, because as people, they want to cook, they will use to cut the local, let me say, the natural vegetation of the area for their cooking. Because we experienced during the struggle, there was a place in Pabanga, that is the same Kindila, was used as a training ground. The remnants of the bullets up to today is still, when you burn the area, you'll hear gunshot, you thought somebody shooting, but this is the remnants of the bullets that remain on the ground.
Many state MPs say they support the establishment of cantonment sites in Yei River State, but not in Kindila area, saying it's too close to the borders of Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Lampol Gabriel, deputy military spokesman for the SPLA-IO, tells South Sudan in Focus via phone from the South Sudanese town of Bor that the SPLA-IO will not move its forces from Kindila.
There was a decision of the JDB that, okay, Kindila has to become the cantonment site, and Morta should become a training site. But as far as depending on the country is concerned, we are going to be in Kindila and we are going to be in Morta. We are not going to obey that one. We will obey only orders from the security department or from the JDB. We are not going to Mapoko, because going to Mapoko will be like listening to politicians. And who have got personal interest, it is political decision, which is not right. At the moment, we are not here to campaign. What we are doing here is to implement the similar peace.
Gabriel claims areas under Kindila are under the control of the SPLA-IO forces and says they are staying in Kindila. Brigadier General Santo Domech is the deputy military spokesman for the South Sudan People's Defense Forces.
It is a matter that is supposed to be discussed between the Legislative Assembly, the national government, and maybe the leadership of the army, so that they should come to consensus. But otherwise, we feel it is the implementation of River Taisi's agreement is a national responsibility.
Yei River State Information Minister Jakaria Doko says state officials have not outright rejected the establishment of a cantonment site in Yei River State, but want the location to be agreed up after consultations with all parties. According to Chapter 2 of the Permanent Transitional Security Arrangements, all forces shall be cantoned, screened and trained before joining regular forces, which will serve the next revitalized transitional government of national unity. Daniel Friday Martin, reporting for VOA News, Yeytown.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at the effects of skin products. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you think the current younger generation is disrespectful? Why or why not?
I don't think they are disrespectful. I think we haven't taught them general cultural behavior patterns for the African. We have tended to bring them up more as Western people. So we haven't passed on the African way of respect.
Not all, yeah. Maybe those who have been raised properly in good homes. But I also think the result of this disrespect and bad behavior is the breakage of homes.
I think they are disrespectful because, looking at the olden times, people respected culture. People respected elderly people. But today, they don't think about whether this person is older than me or not.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment, and today we are talking about skin lightening products. According to one estimate, more than 70 million people in Nigeria use skin lightening products regularly, making Africa's most populous country the capital for skin bleaching. But some women reject the trend, saying their natural dark skin is beautiful. But as Timothy Obiezu reports for VOA from Abuja, Nigeria remains a huge market for skin lightening products.
25-year-old Nigerian model and actress Goodness Ben visits a cosmetic shop in Abuja. She wants to be famous and says bleaching her skin could increase her chances at getting more movie roles.
Yes, this is Nigeria. A fair skin is business. That's what it's business. In movie industry, most times the director wants you to like glow. In fact, you should be camera friendly. You know, most times dark people tend to, will I say resist? I don't know. But they are more beautiful and they are catchy when they come in contact with the camera.
According to a 2011 estimate from the World Health Organization, 76 million Nigerians, mostly women, use skin lightening products regularly. Some darker-skinned Nigerians are pushing back against the idea that lighter is better. They say black is beautiful with the so-called melanin movement. Tina Ohanu says she doesn't need to bleach her skin.
My confidence really doesn't come from my skin. It comes from within. And I still get as much attention from the male folk as every other lady should. So I don't think it has anything to do with my confidence.
Bleaching products usually contain hydroquinone, corticosteroids or mercury as key ingredients. These chemicals could have a range of side effects when used regularly, according to skin experts.
You can have stretch marks, the skin becomes fragile, doesn't heal properly. Sometimes you can have, some of them can give you abnormal skin odor, excessive sweating, poor wound healing, so, and then it ages faster.
The beauty industry in Africa is worth several billion dollars and increases by 8 to 10% every year. Nigeria is one of the prime destinations for many beauty agents produced abroad. Ghana, Ivory Coast and Rwanda banned all whitening products while Nigeria joined South Africa in barring those with harmful chemicals. While these moves help promote natural and healthy skin tone, however, the melanin movement is still dwarfed by Africans' demand for skin lightening products. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
A new book explores the rise and fall of South Sudan. Its author, Zach Vertin, a foreign policy analyst who lived in South Sudan and previously worked with the Brookings Institute, the Wilson Center, and the International Crisis Group, talks about the significance of self-determination which led to South Sudan's independence.
As many South Sudanese will know, in the Nilotic folktales of South Sudan, the earth and the sky were once linked by a rope. And that meant that the people of South Sudan could travel up and down that rope and have direct access to the gods and to the heavens and to eternal life. But tragically, that rope was severed as a result of human error. And forever after, the fate of the people was bound to the earth and to the difficulties and suffering and mortality that is the human condition. And I came across that myth sometime along the way during 8 years of working in South Sudan, and I thought it was appropriate for this book, which is in some ways also a story of paradise lost.
And you spend quite a bit of time in South Sudan. Could you just tell us what some of your memories are of the country, of the people?
I spent 3 years there as a political analyst for the International Crisis Group. I spent another two or three as an American diplomat, and then lastly as a sort of author and historical observer. And, you know, over that time, I came to know many South Sudanese who shared their stories for this book. And it's a place I feel very connected to and was fortunate to travel to its furthest reaches, north, south, east, and west. And a place about, despite the circumstances and the tribulations of the last few years, a place about which I have hope and optimism for the future.
There was so much optimism surrounding South Sudan. I even remember, you know, going to vote for South Sudan and what that felt like and how important it was for my family, my dad, who, you know, fought in the war. And then it all just kind of shifted and very quickly it shifted. Looking back, is there anything that could have been done differently to kind of change the circumstances of what the country is going through right now?
Great question, and I try to wrestle with this in the book. You know, when things began to unravel in 2013, many outside of South Sudan asked the obvious question, well, was this a mistake? Was South Sudan's independence a mistake? And I argue no in the book. I don't think it was a mistake. I think it was the right thing, and I think that for a couple of reasons. First is the context. Had South Sudan been denied its chance to exercise its own political aspirations, I think at that point a new and larger war with the North would have ensued, and a war fueled by new oil money and larger weapons that could have proven even more devastating both for North and South Sudan, but also for the entire region. So that's one. And secondly, I think it's just the point about self-determination. This is a principle that had been enshrined in international law for half a century. And South Sudan was, in many ways, the most neglected place on the planet. Its people denied a chance to for economic advancement, and denied services, denied a voice in their own government. So I think there was a very strong case for the people to exercise that right. So I don't think independence itself was a mistake. I think the more pertinent critiques, and these are those I wrestle with in the book, are those about the viability of the state. And I think the more appropriate discussion is not about whether independence was right or wrong, but about expectations and about execution. As we think about what was done in advance, both during the interim period and in the years that followed, to put in place the foundations for a viable state.
That was Zach Vertin, author of the new book, A Rope from the Sky. He was speaking to Ayendeng Bior last week. Tomorrow, Vertin talks about the impact of recent policy decisions on South Sudan and gives his advice on policy decisions towards the country. The UN Children's Fund is launching its largest ever appeal for $3.9 billion in life-saving assistance for 73 million people, including 41 million children affected by conflict, natural disasters, and other emergencies in 59 countries. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva at the launch of UNICEF's 2019 Global Appeal.
This year marks the 30th anniversary of the Convention on the Rights of the Child. The UN Children's Fund says 2019 also marks a year of heightened conflict, with more countries at war than at any time in the past three decades. Among the greatest victims are more than 34 million children affected by conflict or disaster. UNICEF says they are suffering horrific levels of violence, deprivation, and trauma with little access to protection and life-saving assistance. UNICEF Director of Emergency Operations, Manuel Fontaine, says 88% of this year's appeal is for humanitarian crises driven by conflict. He says the single biggest operation is to help Syrian refugees, the largest displacement crisis in the world, and the host communities in five neighboring countries of asylum.
The second largest appeal is for Yemen, which over the past year has seen conditions, unfortunately, that were already catastrophic for children, get even worse, if that's possible. 8 out of 10 children, which is over 11 million, now require humanitarian assistance in Yemen.
UNICEF's biggest operations traditionally have been in Africa, but this year, the Democratic Republic of Congo places third, followed by Syria and South Sudan. Fontaine says Africa, unfortunately, is the continent with the biggest gap in funding. He tells VOA African countries are not getting the attention they need, and that has serious consequences for humanitarian operations.
In a country like Cameroon, which is one of the countries for which we have concerns, particularly in the northwest and southwest region at the moment, we had aimed to immunize 61,000 children against measles, and because of lack of resources, we could only immunize a bit more than 2,000. So obviously, we're far behind where we needed to do.
Fontaine says UNICEF has had to drastically cut back services for gender-based violence in Central African Republic because it only has received 36% of the money it needs. In all cases, he says, funding shortfalls have very direct implications on the lives of children and women. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That report by Lisa Schlein brings us to the end of our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song One Love by Etum Pan.
All I need is your love, oh baby. So baby, don't dodge, just give me that, oh baby. All I ever need is your heart, oh. So give me that, oh girl, let me back, oh. Cause that is all I need. Oh, be don't want, don't leave me. Oh, be pair, what, penny, penny, be. Oh, be don't want, don't leave me. Girl, I dey love you not because of your bumper, bumper. Girl, I dey love you not because of your tongue, tongue. Girl, I dey like you for who you are, not for your shape looking like guitar, not for the sake of your shape guitar. Girl, play 'em, girl, play 'em. Tinini, tada, no tinini. Give me melody, give me melody. Your melody of love, oh baby. Charlie, love will no be naira or dollar. Oga, you know the matter whether you be short or tall. Obi, don't want, don't leave me. Obi, pay what, penny, penny be. Obi, don't want, don't leave me. Obi, pay what, penny, penny be. All we need is one love, oh baby. For the world to be a better place, oh baby.
We've been listening to Etum Pan with the song One Love. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. We hope you join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Baby girl, make you roll it, roll it. It's a beautiful thing, so hold it, hold it. Somebody need ya, somebody want ya, somebody somewhere really care about ya. Baby, what you say? I truly tell you no. Obi, don't want, don't need.